Well, summer is in full gear and fall is just around the corner, and that means, of course, that our insect world is buzzing with ferocity. So we thought it'd be a good time for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden. She's an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. This program is made possible tonight by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and tonight we invite you to call in with your questions about our insect world, both fiendish and friendly, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Dr. Burden, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, Bill.
So some folks may remember that last year we reported that there was a new bug attacking ash trees. And, of course, to just about every baseball fan out there, you know that ash is one of the primary woods that baseball bats are made out of. So can you tell us, this has actually moved closer to our neighborhood now. Can you tell us about this bug?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I can. It's called the ash beetle. That is the ash emerald beetle. I'm sorry. It's called the ash emerald beetle. It's a small beetle, about a half an inch long, about a quarter of an inch in diameter, and the adults lay their eggs on the bark of ash trees. The immatures burrow into the layer between the bark and the hardwood. This is the vascular layer, and they start to destroy the xylem and the phloem, the way that the plant allows the water to be uptaked from the roots and the nutrients to be stored in the roots to flow down, and it starts to kill the tree with heavy enough infestations, and it's now been reported in southwestern Arkansas. The counties so far are Hot Spring, Clark, Nevada, and Columbia and Dallas counties. And unfortunately, by the time you notice that the tree is infested and it starts to defoliate and lose part of its canopy, it's almost too late to treat. And you have to treat for both the adults and the immatures. The adults are going to be on the outside, so you can use a foliar spray. The immatures are going to be on the inside, so you have to use a root uptake, what we call a systemic drench, so the insecticides can be absorbed by the roots and brought up to where the beetles are feeding to kill them.
So this sounds almost like the problem with the loblolly pines about 10 years ago all
Absolutely.
Over the South, that, that there was a beetle that was killing them. And I remember seeing huge swaths of pines that looked like they were good pines, but because they were already infected, even though they weren't dying, they just got rid of the wood and ground them up.
That's really, now with ash, it's a little bit different. We don't have as many uses for pine, especially with firewood, that we have for ash. Since it's only the layer between the hardwood and the bark that's being destroyed, you can go ahead and use part of the bark for table making and rustic, but it's probably going to, once it starts killing off the trees and killing off the trees, it's eventually going to affect that production of my favorite pastime, American baseball,
right?
It's used to make a lot of the bats, but you know, it's it can be treated. It's not a hopeless cause, and the good news is that woodpeckers like to eat these little borers that are inside the tree, so the woodpeckers get a meal and helps to decrease the population.
All right. Give us a call if you'd like to get on What's Bugging You tonight, our program about entomology with Dr. Beverly Burden. She's a associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. And I just passed her a photo, and for those who would like to go along tonight, we have a bunch of photos on our webpage. Just go to redriverradio.org and click on the What's Bugging You post and scroll down. And this one is, we do have a photo up there of the emerald ash borer, so you can see that. And this one is of an unusual bird. It was an NPR story that I saw floating around today on the website, and it is about the hummingbird, but it's not a bird. Okay, can you tell us about, this is actually a moth, is it not?
It is a moth. It's in the hawk moth family that we call Sphingidae, and they have clear wings, and They're one of the fastest flyers in the moth world, and they're actually diurnal, whereas most moths are come out at night. They're nocturnal, and these will feed just like a hummingbird will. They're a little bit smaller than a hummingbird, but they will hover, and instead of having the long beak with the long tongue, they don't have a beak, but they do have a very long tongue that they can reach out and gather nectar, and a lot of people see these feeding right along the side, hummingbirds. And the neat thing about it from a biological point of view is that it's mimicking the hummingbird, mm-hmm. and or the hummingbird is mimicking it, and it will take some biological and ecological studies. But for the most part, we think that it's mimicking the hummingbird because most birds that will eat moths won't eat hummingbirds, and therefore by looking like a hummingbird, it might be secondarily protecting itself from being the prey of birds, because birds like to eat a lot of moths and butterflies. They're nice, big, juicy, robust bodies, and they're absolutely fascinating. If you just take a little bit a look for a while, though, you'll see they'll have these antenna where the hummingbirds won't, but they're absolutely fascinating to watch out in nature.
Well, that's interesting. If you'd like to read this story, you can actually go to our website. That's redriverradio.org. Click on the What's Bugging You post, and you'll scroll down. You'll see the photo of the hummingbird moth, and there's also a link to the NPR story so you can read all about it. But right now, we encourage you to give us a call at 800-552-8502 with your questions about what's bugging you tonight. And we do have one call online, Dustin from Longview. You're online with Dr. Beverly Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Yes, thank you, doctor. Basically, I had a pretty simple question. We've noticed here recently in the last 2 months a minor infestation of these relatively small yellow scorpions that have come inside the home. And my question was basically what kind of danger do they pose? I know that I didn't narrow it down too much for you, but what kind of danger do they pose generally if you're stung?
The scorpions in this part of the area, whether you're in East Texas or West Louisiana or anywhere in the Arklatex region, there's a few species, and they are very relatively small, tan to yellow scorpions. Their sting is no worse than the sting of a honeybee or a paper wasp, as long as the individual doesn't have a hypersensitivity to it. You know, a lot of people are allergic to wasps, and if they're allergic to wasps, it might be that they're allergic to the protein that's in the venom of the scorpion. And the reason that they're coming into the house is twofold. Do you live in a new house, Dustin?
No, ma'am. It was built in 1979.
That's unusual, because a lot of the calls I get is when people build a brand new house and they built their house right on a territory of scorpions, and they're just trying to regain their ground. But scorpions in the summer will come in looking for shelter. Sometimes they'll be coming in looking for moisture. And they're basically lost because there's not enough significant prey in your home to sustain them. And if you can see light underneath a door or around a windowsill, that's enough for them to sneak through. And so if you want to do a little extra caulking and or weather stripping, that would help to keep them out.
Okay, great. Thank you, doctor.
You're welcome.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. She's an associate professor of biology here at LSUS, and she's here to answer your questions about our insect world. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go to Tommy from Longview next. Tommy, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Hey, guys. So in my backyard, I have a yucca plant that has just this year put off its second shoot, and it's starting to flower. At the top of that, I have a lot of brown insects that are gathering, a lot of them, probably too many to count, really. And they have been, I guess, preying on the flowers that are coming off of the yucca plant, and all the flowers have fallen off. The other shoot is about to flower, and I'm wanting to get these bugs off so that I can, you know, enjoy those flowers as they come out. What are those bugs, and is there any way to control them?
Do they fly, Tommy, or are they just...
They do.
They do?
They do, and they have those long back legs.
Okay, well, those were probably being attracted to the smell and wanting to lay their eggs, you know, along that fermenting smell, because flies like to lay their eggs in moist fermenting areas. And if I were you, I would just take a little bit of seven dust and spray and just dust it on the flowers, and that should take care of them, and they should go away. If they if they're delicate enough, you might want to take a little bit of just soapy, very dilute soapy water and spray on them a little bit, and that will take care of them too without destroying the integrity of the flower.
Great. But,
yeah, yucca moths. I doubt if they're yucca moths. Those are very famous moths out in the southwestern part of the United States that have a very symbiotic relationship to yucca plants, but I don't think that exists this far east. So enjoy your plant, Tommy, and thank you for your call.
Thanks a lot.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. She's an associate professor of biology here at LSUS, and she is here to answer your questions tonight. And we had, after our last show, we had a number of photos that were sent in. By the way, if you can get a photograph of a bug and send it in to us, whether for tonight's show or for a future show, we'd be happy to go ahead and have Dr. Beverly Burden try to help you identify the insect in question. You just send that photograph to wbeckett@lsus.edu. That's wbeckett with two T's at lsus.edu. And a link to that with an email handler is on our website as well. This came in from, it was a listener, Jane, who sent this in. And it's a photo that is also on our website tonight. You can look this up. This is a type of a moth, and it's actually a piece of cloth with what looks like some larvae on it. Can you tell us what that bug is?
Yes, I can, Bill. These are called case-bearing moths, and they're normally not found with enough regularity that they used to be. They used to be found a lot, and they will eat any kind of dry dry organic matter that they may find inside your house. This may be a dry taxidermic preparation that wasn't cured well enough, but in the past, they would take on and eat the clothing that was produced by natural fibers like camel hair coats, Angolian sweaters, you know, a lot of times wool sweaters that were made. But now we have such natural synthetic blends that we don't encounter them. And these are the ones that Grandma always told you why you should have cedar blocks in your closet, because right, the cedar would be a deterrent to those. But if you find these in your house, and one of the reasons they're called case-bearing moths is because the second time that the caterpillar pupates to a larger skin, it basically carries the old skin around with it, or it will actually make a little house with the fibers that it's eating as a shelter. And if you've ever seen bagworms out on a like a cypress tree or a juniper bush, very much, but with inside but not plant material. And they're normally not harmless. They're more of a nuisance factor than anything else.
Okay. So if you have a photograph out there like this one, and you can see a photograph of this on our website as well, then please feel free to mail that to us. The email instructions are on our website, redriverradio.org. Just click on What's Bugging You. We have four calls in the bullpen, so to speak. Pete, Tony, and David, please hang on the line. We're going to go to John now from Pineville. John, you're online with Dr. Beverly Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
All right, Dr. Burgle. I have yellow jackets that are just got in between the walls of my home. This is the second time, not the same house, but I live in another place. And they did the same thing. What's the best treatment to get rid of them?
Well, unfortunately,
I'll listen to your answer on the radio.
Thank you, John. Unfortunately, there's no simple treatment for that. You can either remove part of the wall so you can have full access to the wasp. If it was my house, I would just constantly bombard it with a pyrethroid type of a spray. And you can just go to the store. They're called Yellow Jacket Wasp Hornet Sprays. And, you know, you can go out there and they'll shoot, a lot of them will shoot like 27 feet up in the air. But so you can stand at a fair distance and just basically, just like you were a fireman, just kind of bombard that hole with the insecticide. Now, my advice to you is to do it very early in the morning when it's cool, or very late in the evening when it's cool, when everybody's at home. And that way you get a higher destruction power for your efforts. And they will hang around there for a few more times. I mean, you might want to hit it one or two times, but eventually they will abandon the nest. And then once they've abandoned the nest, do everything you can to block that entryway so they don't come in next season and cause the same disturbance, and just leave the nest in there. It's extra insulation.
Okay. You're listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden. She's our resident entomologist here at Red River Radio. She's also an associate professor of biology at LSUS, and she's taking your calls tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800 800- 552-8502. Give us a call and let us know what's bugging you. And we're going to go next to David from Nacogdoches. David, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Evening. Well, this one's a bit of a strange question because actually I live downtown Houston, and I'm kind of passing through Nacogdoches, which is why I heard you guys. But I live in a converted warehouse, kind of like a warehouse loft, and it's just overrun with fruit flies, like those Drosophila kind that you use as like an undergrad student to make experiments with.
Drosophila, yeah.
Yeah.
They have to be, they have to have some source to breed with. Flies will not lay eggs, especially fruit flies, unless there's a moist organic manner. And this could just be overwatering a plant, and so that there's always moisture there, there's always, you know, rotting leaves, there's always some type of potting material there. And I tell people to first thing is look at your potted plants, make sure you're not overwatering them, let them dry out before you water them again, because their immatures, which we do call maggots, will not be able to thrive in dry conditions. If that's not the situation, then make sure you don't have, then start looking at your drains and your sinks, the drains and your tubs. They may be clogged with some kind of organic matter that they're down in there living on those. And it doesn't have to be a complete clog. But anywhere that there's potential moisture, that's going to be your source of egg laying. Dry that up and you'll take care of the fruit fly moths. You can also attract them, lay out little bowls of yellow soapy water, and they'll be attracted to that. They'll dive bomb in there and die that well that way also. But you got to get rid of the source.
I've got lots of houseplants because I volunteer at a greenhouse, so that's probably the case. But the soapy water, I'll try that out.
Yeah, go for the source though. I mean, it could be a two-way bomb. One, take care of the dry environment for the maggots, and two, take out the adults with the soapy water and the yellow dishes.
Cool. That's good to know. Thanks.
You're welcome, David.
All right. Thanks for calling. You are listening to What's Bugging You Tonight with Dr. Beverly Burden. We're taking your calls at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Anything related to our insect world, both fiendish and friendly, is fair game. Give us a call, and we'll want to know what's bugging you. And we're going to go next to Tony from Lufkin. Tony, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Yes, thank you so much. Yeah, through a recent inspection, I have saw that both my storage buildings are infested with termites. One of them I intend to demolish because it's so old. So my question is, do I need to be adjacent to each other by maybe 20 feet? But do I need to treat both areas even though I'm going to demolish one? And if I do, do I need to do it before it's demolished or after? Does it make a difference as far as spreading the infestation?
When you talk about demolishing buildings concerning termite damage, first of all, the termites that we have here, unless they're the Formosan termites, which are a non-native invasive species, are called subterranean termites, which means they must maintain contact with the soil. And so it's highly likely that if they're that close, there may be tunnels. And it depends on whether it's one colony or two colonies, and it's hard to tell. And so I would, if you're going to raise one building, make sure that you destroy all of the wood material and don't leave any feeding material there on that location. Then you can go back to the building that you're not raised and, you know, taking out, and you can treat those colonies. The problem with most of the time treating termite colonies requires a license to deal with the type of insecticide that's required to kill them. You can't go off and buy that off the shelf. You have to be a licensed supplier for it. But keep an inspection and make sure that there's no dirt tunnels. It depends on whether it's a slab or a non-slab building. A lot of the architecture goes through there. And the other thing is that termites, just like those flies, cannot exist unless they have a water source. Most people don't find out they have a termite problem until after they discover that they have a problem, So control the moisture, you can control the termites.
Okay. Thank you much.
You're welcome, Tony.
Thank you for calling. You are listening to What's Bugging You, our program about our insect world with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call tonight and ask her a question at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go to next Pete from Zavalia, Texas. I hope I pronounced that town name correct. What's bugging you tonight, Pete?
Hi, good evening. It's Zavala.
Zavala, gotcha.
we're kind of between Luskin and Jasper. I'm curious, I don't know if it's my imagination or not, but has the diversity of the insect population changed? I don't see the praying mantises and the walking sticks and lightning bugs and those sorts of things that I recall from years past. And I just don't, I've heard some anecdotal reasons, but is that a fact or is it just my imagination?
Well, there's several ways to answer that, Pete. The first way I'm going to answer it is that the praying mantis have not gone extinct. The fireflies have not gone extinct. The diversity is just still there, but the abundance of the insects are what has been reduced. And that's primarily due to urbanization. It's not so much that we're releasing more insecticides or more toxins out into the environment. It's just that their what we call the ecological niche has been so reduced that we're not seeing it as much as we used to. And we're dealing with more urban areas as composed to urban / rural areas. But you go out to the rural areas, and in fact, there's this one trail that I frequent lately, and I've noticed more and more fireflies coming back into that area because it's been reduced, you know, from an urban to more of a rural area. And so they're bouncing back. There's a lot of resilience and resurgence to insects. So I wouldn't worry about them. It's just go out and look for them. They're there.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, when I was a child, and this was actually up in Ohio, we used to go out and catch, you know, fireflies, mm-hmm. as we called them, all the time, lightning bugs with jars. You
Absolutely.
Know, and we'd have them in our bedroom at night, and they'd glow, and it was just so fun. And he's right. I don't see that many. Of course, I'm in a city now, and I grew up in a small town. It's a vastly different kind of ecosystem.
A completely different ecological niche.
You are listening to What's Bugging You tonight with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. If you have a call and a question for her, you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our insect world, both fiendish and friendly, is fair game. Give us a call, and she'll answer your questions tonight on What's Bugging You. We're going to go next to Shreveport. Homer from Shreveport, what's bugging you tonight?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I had a cedar bush out in my front yard, and we've had that cedar bush ever since I moved into this house. We've been in the house for 5 years, and the cedar bush was green, beautiful. And suddenly, about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, there were these brown pods hanging off of a lot of the limbs, mm-hmm. and they looked like they were part of the tree. Well, suddenly this spring, these things started reeling them, I guess I would call it, reeling themselves to the ground on webs. And then they were crawling to the house. They had just about eaten up the tree. And it turned out to be, well, we researched, it turned out to be bagworms. Well, it was hundreds of them. A lot of them died, I guess, in trying to get from the tree to the house. It was about 20 yards maybe. But some of them made it to my pine trees, a few, and some of them made it to the bushes out front, some hedges out front. I think I killed most of them in the hedge, but a lot of them are up in the pine tree. And my question is, do I have anything to worry about? I haven't bought any expensive bagworm spray, but do I have anything to worry about if I just let them survive?
Well, I would certainly be concerned about your cedar bush, not so much your pine tree. It's unusual to find them in a pine tree. What happens is that these little caterpillars will start eating on the leaves and the foliage of cedar bushes, also some junipers that they'll get onto. And then they do use the leaves to make a little bag, and basically it's like a sleeping bag for them. They live in there. It's very well protected. And then when they need to pupate to change into an adult moth, they will drop down and wander away and then turn into an adult. The adults are not going to climb back up your pine tree. That sounds like a secondary infestation to me. But a lot of times insects will get on trees that they're just don't going to be able to complete their complete cycle. But I would definitely look at treating your cedarberry bush. I'm guessing that, again, that this might be type of a soil drench insecticide that you may apply, because they're so well protected into those bags. There may be a spray, but I would have to go in and research that myself. I'll hold on to tell you whether to put it in the soil or to spray the plant, and just get online and you can pull that up. And I would, if you have to spray it on the plant, I would suggest that you use a pyrethroid.
But less concerned about the pine tree.
Yeah, I wouldn't be concerned about my pine tree at all.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you for calling, Homer. You're listening to What's Bugging You, our program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burton. Give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. You can also follow along with us tonight online on our website. We've got some more photos that we're going to share, as well as the ones that we did early in the program. We're going to go next to Jimmy from Shreveport. Jimmy, what's bugging you tonight?
I have a couple of questions about yellow jackets. And the first is, what makes a yellow jacket, even though you run a lawnmower over their nest, when they come out, they don't go for the lawnmower, they go directly for you? And second, is it just my imagination, or is their venom a little more potent and painful than, say, a red wasp?
Well, it depends on the individual. People have been trying to distinguish pain levels between individuals for a long, long time. And there's been a lot of interesting research, and there's been a lot of interesting laws that come out about what you can and cannot do to animals in pain research. You know, what may be painful to you may not be as painful to somebody else, and so there's a lot of variability in that. Now, as far as why they go for you instead of the lawnmower, one thing that's setting them off are the vibrations. That's what they're picking up on. The lawnmower is vibrating. You're not, but you're associated with the lawnmower, so it's going to go to you. My brother had the same incident. He's a farmer, a rancher out in north central Texas, and they use a lot of hollow pipe for their, a lot of old oil pipe for their fence lines, and a bunch of bees got in there. And when he pulls his diesel up in there, all he has to do is sit there and just do nothing. And pretty soon the vibrations on that diesel engine, they just start come pouring out of there. Mm-hmm. Now, there are a lot of yellow jackets that are ground dwellers. And I would do what I could to just basically just cover that up, put a board on it, and basically just make it inhospitable as possible. And they'll soon go away if you don't want to drench the soil with an insecticide, which I personally would not. Or sometimes you can flood them out with the water hose. But my advice to you, Jimmy, is stand away. Run the hose out there and get at least several feet away.
Okay, well, I appreciate it.
All right, you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. You can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 if you have a question for her, and she'll answer that question tonight. We're going to go next to Ed from Nacogdoches. What's bugging you tonight, Ed?
Well, I've just got a very all-purpose question. Termites and fire ants, do they not get along?
Termites and fire ants really should never be that closely associated with each other. Yes, they are both ground-dwelling insects, and I suppose if their colonies were to overlap, then one would fight the other. Ants are ants, termites are not ants. They're completely different, although they both have a caste system where they have workers and soldiers and reproductive, some queens, if you will. But a lot of people sometimes get the fire ant reproductives and the termite reproductives, the ones that are winged, confused. And there's a very easy way that you can distinguish between fire ants that have wings and termites that have wings. Fire ants that have wings will have four wings, and one pair of the wings will be a lot shorter than the other pair. Whereas in termites, when they have wings, they will also have four wings, but their wings will all be of some equal length. You can also tell the workers apart. Fire ant workers are a little brown red, whereas termite workers look like white ants. And if you can look close enough to their antenna, there's distinct differences within that as too. But unfortunately, I'm trying to decide, you know, who would win a fight, you know, in a theoretical thing. You know, would it be the fire ant or the termite? Fire ants have the toxins, but the termites may have the mass, so because they're so much larger. So who would win in this kind of case? I don't know. It'd be an interesting thing to debate.
I guess what I was thinking about, or sort of debating with myself about was that it would be better to have fire ants around and let them, if there was a choice between the two of them, you know, I've never had a problem in my house with fire ants, but, you know, termites can certainly ruin your house.
Oh, I would take fire ants over termites any day of the week, absolutely, because fire ants are very treatable. Termites are not. Termites are destructible. Fire ants are just a nuisance as far as blocking electrical circuits and, of course, their sting. So, fire ants over termites every time.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Ed. You're listening to What's Bugging You, our program about our insect world with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502 if you'd like to get in. And Barbie Maxson, artist, you are online. Hang on. We've got a online thing that came in. We've got to get to that. And this was a photograph. And, folks, you can see this on our website as well at redriverradio.org. Just click on What's Bugging You at the top of the homepage. This is a listener, Lucy, sent this photo in to us, and you can see it, as I said, on our website. It's another strange-looking creature, and you had identified this via email with her. Can you let our listeners know what this is in case they might happen to glance upon this bug out there?
Well, let me first describe it. It's an elongated insect. It has six legs, as all insects do, but it looks like it has three antennae,
mm-hmm.
and two off the side and one completely in the middle. And their body is kind of curved up, almost like a curved aspect of a scorpion, but it doesn't curve all the way around. It's just kind of angled up in the back. And these are the immatures of true bugs. And you can see the segmentations because they've yet to develop their wings yet. Once they develop full wings as adults, you won't be able to see that segmentation or the bright orange coloration of their body contrasted with their black legs. And that third part that you might think is an antenna, it's actually a mouth part. Just like a mosquito has a very long, needle-like proboscis mouth part extension, these true bugs, and there's many families and many species and many types of true bugs, I actually have a fondness for them, they will feed on plant juices in a very similar manner the way mosquitoes will feed on animal blood. And these oftentimes come out early in the spring. We might actually have another generation late in the summer and early fall where they become adults, laid eggs, and those eggs have hatched again, so you can get two generations per year. And if you see these on your ornamental plants, your garden plants, since they are very soft-bodied at this stage, a little spray of soapy water, as long as it doesn't toxic, if it doesn't harm the plant, is a good non-insecticide way to take care of these. I love them.
All
They're
right.
so cute.
Yeah, they actually are one of the few bugs that I might actually pet. And probably not. Give us a call tonight if you have a question about our insect world, both fiendish and friendly, at 800-552-8502. And you can get online with Dr. Beverly Burden. The program's name is What's Bugging You? And we're going to go next to Barbie from Pinesville. Barbie, you're online. What's bugging you tonight?
And when I'm at work, we've got these little, it's like a gray beetle, but it's got a yellow stripe down each outside of its shell on top, and they're like mating, and I just want to know what it is.
Can you describe the overall shape of the beetle? Is it elongate? Is it round? Is it triangle?
It kind of comes to a triangle at the butt.
In that case, what I'm thinking that you may have is not a type of beetle, but some type of a true bug. Does it kind of look like a stink bug, Barbara?
Yep.
Yeah, it might be a stink bug. And they'll have those yellow lines. And this time of the year, they're coming in. Most of these are plant feeders, and so they're not posing any kind of harmful risk. If your office has some foliage plants, then they might be attracted to some of those plants. But also, at this time of the year, they may be looking for places to overwinter. And bless their little hearts, they're just lost. And I have no reason... Well, I have no idea why they might be coming into your particular place of work. I would have to look at the
outside.
General structure. They're outside? Okay.
They're outside.
Then there's some plant out there that they're attracted to. And normally they don't, unless it's a fruit plant, they don't really harm the plants that much. And in fact, there's 50% of the lady beetles, or half of the lady beetles, that stink bug plants, they're actually eaters of other stink bug bugs. So half of them eat the plants and the other half eat the ones that eat the plants. And so it's kind of a dynamic ecosystem there.
But these are all mating.
Well, it's that time of the year. You know, they're just mating and then laying eggs for the next generation. And with it being such a mild summer, they might actually get another fall generation out of their life cycle.
And, I mean, you can tell the females because as soon as one male gets off of her, another male jumps on her. They're smaller.
Yeah, the males are normally smaller in this insect world, and insects are very promiscuous. Let's just say it that way, very promiscuous. Even lady beetles, they're not that ladylike at all.
Well, I just wanted to know what they were.
They're little stink bugs. There's lots of different species of them.
Well, I knew the little green ones, when you smash them, they stink.
Not all do, though.
These don't.
Yeah, not all do. It depends on whether they have scent glands or not.
Right.
And that's just the diversity of Mother Nature.
Well, thank God for Mother Nature.
I just leave them alone, Barbie. They're not harming anybody.
Oh, they don't harm me. I just chase them away.
There you go. Live and let live.
All right. Thank you very much for your call tonight, Barbie, and we appreciate it. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call tonight, 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Max from El Dorado, you're online next. What's bugging you tonight, Max?
Dr. Burden, I have long admired what's commonly referred to as the snake doctor. That's the most exquisite insect that I know of. And what I would like, I have seen a lot of them, more than usual this year for some strange reason. And what I would like is a reference to a book that will give me their life cycle and explain the origin of the insect, if there is such a thing. And I just like to familiarize myself with them by reason of the fact that I admire them so much.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Matt. There's a lot of insects that have a lot of different types of common names. And some of these common names are very regional, and sometimes they're even, very localized. I'm not familiar with the name snake doctor. What else can you tell me about it to kind of cue me off on what it might be?
Yeah, it's got four wings. The wings are partially transparent. Somewhere within the wing, there is a colored design, and the abdomen is maybe an inch or a little more, and it will vary in color. Oftentimes, the one I just saw tonight, as a matter of fact, and prompted me to call you, the little abdomen was a gray-blue. But I have seen green ones and various other colors. But the little wings are the most distinctive part of the insects, and they're transparent except for these little. There are usually two colored areas in each of the wings, and I've never been able to get close enough to one to see what the head structure looks like. Apparently, they don't have any detectable antennae, but they are exquisite, and they come in a variety of different shapes and colors, and they're always around water, if that helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds to me that you're describing one of the species of dragonflies that we have in this area.
Dragonflies.
And what's so neat about dragonflies is that they do come in a wide variety of beautiful colors, beautiful patterns even on their wings. The immatures are aquatic, so you always find them, because when the immatures emerge as adults, the adults will go back to the aquatic area and lay eggs. Some of them are called darners because they'll skip along the water while the females dip her abdomen in the water to lay the eggs. And they can be very mesmerizing, I would think, you would call them a snake doctor. And they're very beneficial to the society, and because the immatures are in the water and keeps that ecosystem in balance, and then the adults will eat a lot of mosquitoes. And there's a lot of books on dragonflies of Louisiana, dragonflies of Arkansas, and The scientific classification is Odonata, O-D-O-N-A-T-A. And just look up dragonflies, and there's some wonderful references out there, especially dragonflies identification through binoculars.
Okay, great. The reason I couldn't find it, I guess, is the reason that my neighbor told me they're called snake doctors.
Well, I have a question for you, Max. Are they called snake doctors because the mythology is they travel around and take care of snakes, so if they're around, snakes are nearby?
I don't know. The next time I see one, I'll ask them.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
No, I think it derives from the fact that they are predominantly around water.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have a little lake not far from where I live, and when I walk my dog down past this little lake is when I usually see most of them. But apart from the fact that they are beautiful insects,
mm-hmm.
they are also intriguing in the fact that they come in such a variety. So, Dr. Burton, thank you very much. You've been a tremendous help. And I'm going to become an authority now on dragonflies.
The other really nice thing about dragonflies is because their immatures are so sensitive to changes in the environment, a lot of environmental scientists will monitor the population of the immatures of dragonflies and damselflies so that if their populations decrease, sometimes that raises a red flag that the waters may be becoming polluted or toxic in some way. They're called indicator species.
Okay. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And it's always fun to come across something that is a little different. I'd never heard. I mean, of course, I've seen tons of snake doctors. And I looked it up online, and it's like snake doctors in the South. Y'all call them dragonflies.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, of course, there's many, many variety of dragonflies. I've been all over the country and seen all kinds of different variations. If you'd like to give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502, you're welcome. Welcome to anything relating to our insect world. You can give us a call and get online with Dr. Burton and let her know what's bugging you. And we're going to go next to Greenwood with Artis. Artis, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I used to have about a year ago, I had some red tips, and they grew about seven feet tall, and beautiful red tips. They covered a wrought iron fence out by the street. And maybe about a year and a half ago, it became the last red tip on the outer side, it started being eaten by something, some type of disease or something. And I had my yard person, he told me, well, that's some type of disease that's eating your leaves. And he didn't say what it was, but what I had to do, it spread it all the way through the red tips, and I had to cut them all down. And he suggested that I cut them down to the ground all the way, but I hadn't done that yet. But I cut them all the way down, and they will not come back. And the leaves, he said it was the disease was in the leaves for some reason, and it will spread all over the yard if I didn't get rid of those. So, you know, I cut those down, you know, all the way just about to the ground, and now they're not bearing anymore.
Well, with Photinia red tips, that's a beautiful ornamental plant that we have in this area, and there's not a lot of pest problems that I've ever seen that causes that much decimation to the plant. Now, there are some June bug-like beetles that will feed on the leaves, but not to cause that much of a damage, and not all the way across. It does sound like what you're dealing with is some type of an internal fungal or bacterial infection. And
well,
so I think your yard man was completely right. And once it gets into the root systems, there's not a lot you can do about it. And cutting them down oftentimes is just trying to, you know, make the plant as inhospitable as possible to this fungus, so perhaps the fungus will die out and hopefully the plant will come back. But if that didn't happen, then that's an unfortunate situation that it does occur in some ornamental plants. But I wouldn't be so concerned about it maybe, you know, floating over to your other plants, because it normally those type of things remain internal within the vascular system of your plant, Artis.
And one other thing, when you say floating over to the other plants, I have some evergreens that, I mean, for 20 years they've been fine in the front yard, and now that same little fungus is right in the front, and it's eating up that one little evergreen. I'm going to have to pull that one up, and it's just really something.
Well, there are some fungicides that you can apply to plants that will take care of funguses, and sometimes it's an external spray. Sometimes you pour it in the soil, so it's taken up by the roots and it kills the fungus that way. I mean, just like you taking an antibiotic, sometimes you take it, you know, with a glass of water, and sometimes you have to get it in a shot. And so, what I would actually advise you to do, Artis, is find your closest Louisiana Agricultural Extension Agency and take them a copy, a sample of that plant. And they should be able to tell you whether it's a viral plant, a bacterial, or a fungus. And they should be able to, you know, let you know how to treat it without completely having to cut down all your plants in your yard. Something like this, it's completely visual. And so look up your Louisiana Agricultural Extension Station. And what town are you from, Artis?
Greenwood, Louisiana.
Oh, yeah. There's one right here on 70th Road in Shreveport.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Louisiana Agricultural Extension Station. Bring them a sample.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Good luck with that, Artis.
All right. Thank you for your call. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502 to get online and let her know what's bugging you. We go next to Susan from Lone Star, Texas. Susan, what's bugging you tonight?
Hello, Dr. Burden. I have a problem with spider webs at the lake house this summer.
Uh-huh.
They've been on the shrubs, the house, the outside lights, and even the cars. And I was wondering if you could give me a solution to this insect issue.
Turn off your porch lights. The spiders are there because the insects are there. And, you might want to just take a hose to them and wash them down and make it inhospitable as possible for them to build and go back someplace else. But, I mean, we've had the summer that we've had population explosions of good insects and bad insects, and spiders don't care which one it is. They just know it's lunch and dinner.
They're hungry.
And, and so I have a very... I like spiders, and normally spiders, if you don't mess with them, they're not going to mess with you. Black widows aren't going to be building nests like or building webs like that. Brown recluse aren't going to be building webs like that. It's going to be more of your everyday garden type spiders, and they're actually beneficial. I know aesthetically it may not be as pleasing as you might want it to be, but I'd take a hose to them and wash them out.
Well, that's what I've been doing. I thought there might be a preventive measure, but I'll just keep doing what I'm.
Well, you know, unless you want to do something to decrease the bug population, like turning your lights out, but I doubt if that would really make that big of a difference, to be honest with you.
Because a lot of bugs fly at night.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call. And if you'd like to get in tonight, you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Let us know what's bugging you tonight. And we're going to go next to Susie from Natchitoches. Susie, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I'm enjoying your program. It's the first time I've heard it. I moved here 6 years ago from California, Southern California, and you have fire ants here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm really allergic. And I was listening earlier, and you said that there are some that have wings. And where would I find the ones with wings? Are they inside the mound?
Well, that's an easy question to answer, and something I love to talk about because it deals with the life cycle of the insects. When we've had a lot of warm afternoon rains this summer, and the fire ants will always swarm after a rain once the daily temperature reaches a certain temperature, say like 83 degrees. And so when it rains and the next day the temperature goes up, you'll find the fire ant queens, especially you'll find them crawling along the ground, on sidewalks, and they will mate, and then they will shed their wings and develop a new colony. And this goes on all summer long until the winter comes along, and then they go dormant. And that's when you're going to find the winged part of fire ants. Now, the winged part of termites only swarm in the spring. And so if you're having seen swarms now, it's not going to be termites. It's only going to be ants. And since you're really allergic to them, Susie, there is a insecticide that you can apply to the mound, only about a teaspoon.
It's white stinky stuff, right?
Do what?
Is it white and stinky?
It's white and stinky, and
yeah, I have it.
I'm trying to think of the name right now, and it's just not coming up.
Yeah.
It's not imidacloprid. It's azadirachtin. Maybe
yeah.
It's azadirachtin. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, just a small amount, but I've never seen any flying ones, and I usually go out after it rains and look for mounds because they tend to surface.
Well, that's yeah. Well, that's a whole other thing, and but go ahead and just treat the small mounds, and we'll talk about that next show, Susie. Thanks for calling.
All right. We want to thank you for calling. You are listening to What's Bugging You, and we've got a full slate of calls online, plus one question that was sent in. I'm going to go ahead and ask this question real quick. The caller wanted to know, they have squash and cucumbers that were beautiful, and then all of a sudden they were eaten down to the roots. Also, this bug also ate the Shasta daisies, and this person thinks it's the Argentine ant, but what can they treat it with and still be able to safely eat the vegetables that are left?
Well, what I think they're describing is what we call the cucumber beetle. There's a striped cucumber beetle and a spotted cucumber beetle, and I would use a regular vegetable garden spray that has a pyrethrin in it, and that will hopefully save the plant.
Okay. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we're going to go next to Bill from Shreveport. Bill, what's bugging you tonight?
Hey, thanks, Doc. Enjoying your show.
Thank you, Bill.
I've always, up until recently, kept the bug man outside of my house for health reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, I took in a roommate, and she wanted the bug man inside, and so we're letting him in now. I can't really tell the difference in the effectiveness of the treatment, and I'm just wondering, number one, am I crazy to keep him out of the house for health reasons? And two, can they be just as effective spraying outside the house?
Well, Bill, let me, my producer, Bill, just told me that I needed to keep my answers short, so don't be offended.
We got a few minutes on that. We just lost
the
call.
Okay. But if you weren't having insect problems before and you're not having insect problems now, that I don't see why you should be paying for somebody to come in and maintain that you don't have insect problems. Now, we don't have time for you to tell me about all your health reasons, but unless you're extremely allergic to the exoskeleton of insects, which is a pretty rare condition, or you may be hypersensitive to the bites of mosquitoes, which I am, or hypersensitive to the bites of certain ants, I really wouldn't fix the problem unless it's broken. That's, I guess, my biggest advice to you. And I'm cheap. I don't like to spend money on anything I don't have to spend money on. And my husband, Wally, will tell you that in a heartbeat.
Okay. That's so good. I was concerned about the chemicals used in the treatment.
Most of the chemicals that they use are not harmful to humans. They're putting down a pyrethrin, which unless you drink it, it's not going to be a problem because it's sprayed on, it's dried, and it'll affect the insects, but it shouldn't have any human or pet problems whatsoever.
Thanks, Doc.
All right. Thank you for your call. And Marianne, I apologize. We lost you somewhere in the shuffle. So if you'd like to call back real quick, we do still have a little bit of time. Right now, we're going to go to an online question. Bob from Nacogdoches wants to know if Dr. Burden will discuss colony collapse disorder and how it relates to the neonicotinoid class of pesticides, which are banned in Europe.
Yes. First of all, let's talk about colony collapse disorder. This is a situation that's occurring across the nation with our honeybee populations, that most of our crops are completely dependent upon for pollination. It's a combination of a mite. It's a combination of a virus. Now, the nicotinoid type of insecticides are nerve poisons, and these nicotinoid pesticides have absolutely nothing to do with colony collapse disorder, and they're actually very botanical insecticides to use. They're safer than the synthetic pesticides, so I wouldn't overlap one with the other.
You are listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio and with our resident entomologist. And we're going to be getting another question in here as soon as they can get it into me. In the meantime, we got this photograph, and this is the last photograph that we have online, and it was sent from Mike Strong. And it is another kind of an interesting little creature. You can see this online on our website. What is this?
There is a certain type of bee called a leaf-cutting bee, and the female will go out and cut leaves and line the burrow of her nest where she's going to lay eggs with these leaves. And oftentimes you'll see perfectly cut out circles in the leaves of your plants, and that's due to the leaf-cutting bee. And they're not harmful. They're just part of the ecosystem, and probably your plant can withstand enough donating a few leaves for the cause.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burton, and we have Marianne back online. Marianne, what's bugging you tonight?
I am wondering if there is any place that I can donate, please don't laugh, black widow spiders. I do not want any black widow spider bad karma, and I have 18 water meters on my property.
Do you mind catching them?
If I could ship them to someone who could get some benefit, that would be fabulous.
You can ship them to me. Beverly Burton. Yeah, Beverly Burton, Louisiana State University, Department of Biology. And Shreveport, Louisiana, the zip is 71115. So, yeah, just look me up on the internet. Yep. LSU Biology Department, Shreveport, 71115, Beverly Burton. It'll get to me, and I'll put it into our student teaching collection.
Oh, great. All right.
But be careful.
I really appreciate it.
Be careful, Marianne.
Yeah, be very careful.
Yes, I will.
All right. We have time for one more call. We're going to go to Fred. Fred, you're online. What's bugging you tonight?
What's bugging me is white flies in my Meyer lemon tree. This Meyer lemon tree has been extremely prolific over the years. But last year, late in the season, I started getting white flies, which I control with Malathion. This year, the tree bloomed, the bees did their thing. We had a cold spell. The white flies are rampant, and it's set very few fruit. And I'm wondering, A, is there a connection between the white flies and the poor fruit set? And secondly, what can I do other than Malathion to control these things?
White flies are very soft-bodied flies, and they are feeding on the plant. They're actually not a fly at all. They're a what we call a homopteran bug, and they have very soft skin. So if you ever heard of insecticidal soaps where you spray a little soap solution on them, very dilute, it'll wash away their waxy exoskeleton, and they will desiccate and die. And make sure that you get on the upper underneath the underneath the leaves of the plant. Good luck with
okay.
that. It's better for the environment than Malathion. Although I like Malathion for some reasons too, for some situations.
Yeah, what was the name of that chemical again? I'm sorry, my wife.
Insecticidal soap.
Insecticidal soap.
Yeah, you can make your own. Just take a soap bottle and put it in a quart of water and a couple tablespoons, a teaspoons of soap, and shake it up in a spray ball and go to town. Spray.
Thank you very much.
Your fruit loss cannot be recouped for this year, though.
I know that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, we have run out of time here tonight for What's Bugging You, and I want to thank everybody who has called in. If you'd still like to email your question into us, you can. Just go to redriverradio.org. You will see a post at the very top of our page called What's Bugging You. Open that post, and you will be able to find my email address, and then we'll pass it on to Dr. Beverly Burton so that we can get to the chance to answer your question. You've been listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. She is an associate professor of biology at LSUS. And again, we want to thank all the callers tonight and those who joined us. We hope you'll join us next time for another edition of What's Bugging You here on Red River Radio, made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Our next call-in show will be this Thursday night on Health Matters, and it's all about creativity, what makes a creative person. And our next Bird Calls will be on Tuesday, September 16th. We hope you'll tune in for that. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Renee Moran with assistance from Wally Derleth and Daniel Gordy and Kermit Poling. And we want to thank everybody who called in tonight.